Career. He is a past member of the PBS Enterprise Technology Advisory Committee and is an active member of the State of Wisconsin IT Directors Council. Jim received a Bachelor of Science in Radio and TV Broadcasting from the University of Wisconsin-Platteville in 1981 and is a graduate of the Wisconsin Leadership Academy. It occurred to me that I've known Jim for darn near 37 years, and I'm so glad that neither one of us has aged a bit. Jim Kloss.
Thank you, Bill. I think I got myself one ahead there. Yeah, I have known Bill for 37 years, and I remember the fun he used to have with Tektronix 1480, was it? When you used to like to take the raster and push it off the screen and see if the next person that was going to shade cameras got wise to it fast enough, or if you could get them cussing or something. Bill actually used to be a prankster. Anyways, you know, the first thing you got to do with all this stuff, and I've seen a number of presenters do exactly the same thing, and that is start out by defining the problem. Now, in closed caption for things that go on the web, you know, our world really has changed, and that is if we air it on the air and we show it on the web, we've really got to caption it. I mean, there's exception rules we can take and all of that, but if you take the approach of let's caption it, you're probably going down the right path. Captioning needs to be accurate. This morning we heard accurate as well. In our shop, we started taking a look at accuracy maybe a little bit different way. And the way we kind of look at it is, imagine captioning in front of a room full of seventh graders. And you're the teacher there. Would you get heckled for the quality of the captioning? Would the seventh graders be picking up on the misspellings, the poor syntax, bad timing? And keep putting yourself in that seat. Then you're looking at quality right. And that gets really hard to do. The last part is solutions have to be inexpensive and reliable, which are not necessarily mutually exclusive, but I don't know any broadcast outfit that's willing to, say, throw $50,000 at fixing closed captioning for the web. You know, it's got to be several orders of magnitude less than that before you get, you know, not laughed out of a meeting. And the other part is it has to be reliable. I think we're all sick and tired of things that have a constant care and feeding cycle of, oh yeah, I just got to download this one more driver or something like that. We really don't have patience for that in any operation these days. Now, there's some complications. There's a lot of editing systems that are on the market right now. When I'm talking about editing, I mean, you know, video editors that do not handle captioning. Standards have been late in developing. I'm a big fan on standards because it really gives you at least a hope of having an interface between two things that will work. You know, when you really think about what is a standard, it's probably the hardest thing in our industry to do because it means you're going to get a group of people to agree to do something the same way. And that's almost impossible because everybody's got their variation on how they want to go. And there are reasons why. I mean, either the company has put a lot of money into developing a method, or they've put a lot of soul into something, or what have you. And unfortunately, right now, it's way too much like safe-cracking to get it all to work. As I wrote this thing, I kept thinking about safe-cracking. I don't know if maybe I was watching some TV show as I wrote it, but it kind of really is, where if you get the combination of everything right, it'll work. But it's in defining what that right all is that hopefully I can make some headway with you guys today. Going on to editing. As of this spring, the two big ones don't deal with closed captioning at all, and that being Avid and Final Cut Pro. Don't deal with it. I mean, period. You know, if you put a program into Final Cut Pro and try to shorten it up, good luck with the captions. But Adobe Premiere does have tools in it for editing. And when I speak about editing into captions, I'm thinking in terms not only to be able to get the duration, as they were talking about this morning, to fit, but also to be able to make those corrections. Like, what's the right there? What's the right where? Getting syntax correct in the English language. I think about editing for captions, what we have to do at the station level, much like editing a story. And in my vantage point, I don't think you can automate that. I wouldn't want spell check to be the last arbiter of something that I write. Okay, my spelling isn't perfect either, but it's really a matter of how can you get an operator, a human, a person, to look at what are the words being used in captions and make sure they're right. There are there's products out there that will just edit captions. They've got problems too. And that comes down to standards issues. Of the packages that are out there, there isn't one that talks to everybody. And that's where the safecracking comes in. Safecracking again, and no product supports everything. The main standards that really end up, and this one slide here is probably one of the big takeaways, is, you know, these are kind of the commons that we've all focused in on. First is VTT. VTT ends up to be, or Web VTT, is one of the primary formats that you put captions to the web in. There are also a number of transcoder manufacturers that will give you a VTT output. It's pretty rich in data. It's not perfect, but it's pretty rich. The next one is TTML, and that's really time code, that has time code built into it. Very rich in the features that are there. That's when they went through the SMPTE vetting process as far as methodologies. So, you know, that's one where everybody actually agreed how it was going to work. XML is another one that's popular as far as on the ingest side. But XML can have, shall I say, dialects to it. And you may run into some implementation issues in those dialects. XML, SQL, so many of those, the best way to think about them is almost an overlay. If you get four or five fingers to hit, you know, you might be okay, you might not be. Really makes it fun. MCC, which was spoken about this morning, one of the nicer ones actually to use as far as at the ingest side. It captures everything. It is really a raw data dump. On what we push out to the rest of the world, HTML5. And I'll get into a little bit of HTML5 coding. Not real deep, but just a little bit as we go farther in here. There's a pretty significant set of changes that came about with that. And then finally is MPEG-4. MPEG-4 has really become the de facto standard in web publishing right now. The nice part about MPEG-4 is it plays natively on the iPads and the phones. And you don't have as many plug-in browser issues with it as you have had with some of the others. HTML5 changed everything by introducing elements. And the elements we're concerned with for this conversation are both video and captioning. The big aha here is captioning in HTML5 gets its own file. And, you know, so some of the things like line 21, 608, 708, all of that, once you get to HTML5 together with MPEG-4, captioning is not embedded in the video file. And I want to make that perfectly clear. It is its own file. Now, here's a little bit of HTML5 code. And this is a really simple kind of, you know, right up at the front how it works. And as a little bit of a dirt road, I was really surprised when I heard today, because I hadn't heard it before, that the ATSC 3.0 standard will be using HTML5. The power in that is huge if that's in the receivers or the decoders or the software that will be in whatever method we get that stuff with, because it starts to identify how easily we can switch formats and how we can do things like down-resing. And I'll get into a little bit of that. But like here in this basic piece of HTML5 code, we set the source type. It's video and it's MP4. And then we give the name of the source file, and you know, you can go farther and actually give a location for that file. The next part is we just say it is going to be labeled within the browser as an English caption. And we give the source for that, and we're done. You know, so the track source there is the captions file .vtt. Now, from this, you can backwards engineer. Of course, we're using MPEG-4 and then VTT as the file format for the captions to be distributed over the web. The trick is, how do you get everything to be that? HTML5 is a nice method for content delivery. If nothing else, it's a good base understanding, and everything else kind of works from that. But it really lacks some big features, like multi-resolution, full screen toggle. I know, I sure like that. When I look at a YouTube on my computer, that's about the first button I hit is full screen toggle. Some of the tools to be able to share the content, such as an email out or Twitter out or what have you, those kind of things aren't there. And there are no write management tools whatsoever in HTML5. So if you're worried about writes, you know, that's kind of a big problem. What most developers use is an embedded player, something, and they deploy very similar as to the elements of HTML5. So you may name the player like JW Player or whatever player variant that your developer or you pick, and then you will most likely end up naming the video element and the closed captioning element underneath that exactly like you did in HTML5. So it kind of builds on that. You're just adding one more line of code to specify the player. Now, when you specify the player, you can do all kinds of other things, like start on, you know, as soon as you hit that window, it starts playing, or other sort of accessibility tools. You can modify the look of the player a bit, too. These players have far more features. Once again, you know, you can zoom them up to full screen. They may multi-res based on circuit connections, all those kind of things. MPEG-4 and VTT work well in all of the commonly used ones. And you can use HTML5 or Flash as a fallback. So pretty rapidly, you can develop a site that will play across many platforms. At our place, we used to run a dev lab where we ran 4 or 5 revs deep on just Windows Explorer, you know, so you can look and see if, yeah, will that HTML code work as we go back farther and farther and farther back in revision so that we knew we wouldn't get a lot of complaints on something. Eventually, we moved away from that, but HTML5 or Flash gets you out of an awful lot of trouble if you use those as secondary and tertiary methods of distribution. So kind of a midterm review time here because it's been a little bit of spec gobbledygook. MPEG-4 has really become the de facto standard for now for video encoding. And I say the for now because that will change again. You know, MPEG-5 is just around the corner. That has gotten, I'm pretty sure it's through standards right now. And it's a matter of time before that hits implementation. The advantages of those type of codecs, I think we've all heard, but you know, when you look at going from MPEG-2, for argument's sake, if you started with a file that was encoded at 10 megabit, MPEG-4 will give you the same performance at 5 megabit. MPEG-5, or HEVC, will give you that same performance at 2.5 megabit, or you know, same subjective quality of the video. And you know, that's going to drive us to keep moving forward in codecs. So the fun part is the body of work we've done in transcoding and publishing what we all have done, we're going to get to do again. VTT has become one of the de facto standards as far as what we publish to the outside. TTML is one of the other de facto standards is what gets published to the outside. You can really use VTT and TTML interchangeably with either an embedded player or HTML5. And then, of course, HTML5 as the overall descriptor. HTML5 is, you know, virtually all of the common browsers that you'd have, like Internet Explorer, Chrome, what have you, have got pretty good compatibility with HTML5. You can actually do a Google for HTML5 compatibility against browsers if you're curious, and you'll find this great big truth table, and you'll see where they're at. It's nothing gets it 100%, but the things that we're looking at as a video distributor are pretty good. The industry, more midterm review here, the industry has stumbled into a couple of more standards, and that's MCC. And we heard about that today. The idea of finally getting something that's a really good core dump of what we had in either 608 or 708 space, get it out to an open text format that has everything including time code, is wonderful. And TTML is the other one. And once again, that being a SMPTE specification. Accurate. The FCC's definition of this to date has been exceedingly vague. And there was a public notice that was out earlier this year where they started to talk and, you know, tighten up the language on where they're going. The interpretation really is correctly timed, proper spelling, matches the scene, and is located out of the way of the graphics. And now, you know, I kind of get to crawl up on my cynical block here. This is something that's easy for the FCC to audit. The Chicago field office doesn't have to leave their fuzzy slippers to look and see how yours is running. This is stuff over the web. It's easy to find, easy to get to, and easy to audit. And, you know, I've been around auditors enough in my life to realize that they look at the easy stuff first. If you got that right, sometimes they back off. But if you don't get that stuff right, stuff that's easy to tell, which is really my third bullet point there, can of worms could be opened up on you. As far as caption editing, there are a handful of products that have really risen to the top of the market. The first is Adobe Premiere. You know, in the marketing that Adobe has moved to, which is a rental market, is kind of nice because at least you finally get out of the having to deal with all the upgrades. Just pays your subscription and be done with it. Telestream's Caption Maker or Mac Caption. Solid program. Deals with a lot of different elements of captioning and does so very well. And then finally, Subtitle Edit. All of these can do a nice job of the kind of editing that I'm talking about, where you can get a program timed, you know, you can subclip something and, you know, just get what you want, and allow you to change syntax or, you know, delete a scene, what have you. They all work, but they don't work with every file type that's out there. And welcome back to my safe cracking. Adobe Editing does a nice job of caption editing. What you really get with it is a window that sets up for that caption element, and you can edit away in it. If you go and you search for caption editing in Adobe Premiere, they've got a really nice guide on the web. And, you know, crawling back up on my cynical box here, I'm not going to show you screenshots of it. If you're really curious, you'll go look. But it does a nice job with it. It'll open MCC and VANC-type captioning. And it can save as MCC and TTML. So either if you want to do future editing with another program, you're fine. And with TTML, you've got a good distribution platform. And you know, it also, it's a pretty handy tool for audio and video editing. So in a lot of workflows, I can see where, you know, that would be a nice mix. The Telestream products, and that's Mac Caption and Caption. I forgot the other trade name they had. They both can output in TTML and VTT. Really full-featured as a caption editor. But it's a little bit expensive. It's about $1,100 just for the software, for the basic package, which for repurposing video or putting news clips or something like that to air would probably have all the functionality you need. When do you want to start moving forward to automating some of this and building the workflows like he talked about this morning? Now you're getting in the over $5,000 package. Now keep in mind, that's just for the software. That's not the computer, your installation time, your learning. You know, so there's a little bit of money involved in that one. And then finally is subtitle edit. Nice program. This is freeware. And it's available on the web. Just Google subtitle edit, and you'll find it. Written by a guy who has just really got passion for captioning. And there's a lot of heart in this thing. It's not perfect. I mean, you've got to use a plug-in like VNC or something else to play back the video. But you can match up captions to the video very well. You can trim files, you know, so if you cut the front end off or just making a small clip of a news story, it'll work great for that. And it's got some very nice editing features as far as, you know, getting into the English side of it. And interesting, you can even translate to other language with it, but that doesn't always work so good. And it is free. So the keys to survival. And you know, my world has kind of been somewhere between engineering and IT, it seems like, for way too long. But in IT, you learn really quickly that nothing does everything. And the fun part in designing in IT is to figure out, where is your anchor? What's the one part that you just can't change? Like, you've got a transcoder in, you just got done crawling on your knees to get the money for that, you're married to that thing for 3 years. You're not getting out of it. So whatever it outputs, you're stuck with. That's what you're going to do. Or where are you on a distribution platform? You're working with a web developer that will only use one file type or something like that. Look for the anchors that are in your plant. You'll identify them pretty quickly as soon as you start looking in that manner. And then build the rest of the workflow to build around that and make it all come together. So sample workflow number one is to record the program using a Blackmagic HyperDeck. That's really kind of a cool thing, you know, and HyperDeck, as you record a program, it makes an MCC file, and that's where it stores its closed caption. It just does this natively. And they're really inexpensive devices. These things are about $1,000. And the storage medium for them is an SD card. So, you know, the financial hurdles to get one of these things in-house are very low. But now you've got a file type that's got everything, and the HyperDeck you can set to do some lower res recording. So, you know, you don't have to record at 422 and, you know, full bandwidth. You can trim the program then in Adobe Premiere. As I said before, Premiere will work with MCC just great. Edit the captions in Premiere, works with MCC. You can render out in Premiere to MPEG-4, and then push the video and the closed caption editing, elements out to the web. It can be that straightforward. That's an off-the-shelf solution that will work. And it's something that, you know, the closed caption editing is simple enough in the Adobe product that you can teach that to an entry-level employee. It's not that hard. Now, of course, they have to have the English skills, they have to know the context, they've got to have the diligence to get timing right, but at least technically it's not that hard to do. Sample workflow number two. Use a transcoder to rip your video to whatever resolution you want to publish to the web. And then take a VTT file out of that transcoder. Just go right to VTT right from the get-go. Trim the video, you know, cut the tails and heads off and all of that stuff in the editor of your choice. And then you can use subtitle edit, because it can use VTT just fine as an input. And once again, since VTT is the output methodology, you're great. So you can use a freeware product. You can do the video editing in anything, because it doesn't matter, because you're not trying to do the caption editing in a video editor, and then publish the video and caption elements to the web. Questions, comments? Want to get on the standards committee? Give me a call. I know this was kind of a brief presentation, so I guess we have some time for questions.
Hi, thanks. This great presentation on a topic that not everybody understands. So I have a comment and then I have a question. So the FCC actually does have rules regarding what constitutes quality. Unfortunately, I was one of the people who negotiated them with them. And it is negotiated. Basically, what they did was a group of people wrote a set of best practices and talked the commission into adopting best practices rather than hard rules, except what they did was they took the best practices and made it a rule. So there is actually rule sites for what they mean. I have a question about the black magic solution. So what is sort of the cost of implementing the black magic solution with Adobe? It's like a 10 grand range. I'm not asking you to, but I'm just, one of the big questions is how do I do this and do it without breaking the bank?
The Blackmagic solution is surprisingly inexpensive. The actual video recorder that they have, it's a one rack unit thing that almost behaves like an old Sony BVW. They're $1,000. Okay. Adobe Premiere, the subscription for that is about $50 a month.
Right.
So, okay. Not very expensive. Your labor is going to be far more expensive than the components are.
So what rips, so I'm just thinking you said, so in the other solution, you looked at just ripping the video. I just haven't seen one that actually outputs a VTT file. What can you, I don't want you
Telestream,
to plug any.
Well.
Hmm?
The Telestream.
The Telestream, transfer. Okay. All right. I didn't know if there was a freeware ripper out there that actually put it.
They get really buggy.
Yeah, right.
We've tried.
Right. Okay, great. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Wait a minute, Jim. I do have a
comment. I'm not off the hook yet.
No, and you know, you're in the public television world, and I'm in the news world of television. So I think our goals are maybe a little bit different. Maybe we can accomplish them both the same way. But in my world, I'm looking at a workflow that has to happen almost live, several hours a day. I think we're up to 5.5 or 6 hours a day of live news. It's captioned, and it gets cranked around and turned over to the web. So don't you think that somebody somewhere will invent a box that I just feed my video to, and it spits out a web file with a caption file, and away I go publishing it to the web? Or is that something too simple to hope for?
It seems like a very sane request.
When you hear of one,
but
let me know.
I think the closest you can get to something like that is either a transcode cycle or to do a record and then just have a relatively quick turnaround.
Okay, so the Telestream product is what you're describing, correct?
Yeah, something like that, or Carbon Coder. You know, there's a competitive arena there, but
okay.
And they are a little labor intensive to get the workflow to actually work, as anybody who's fought with them knows.
Thank you.
Going once, going twice. Hey, Vicki.
With MPEG-5, will that likely use an external caption file, or could there be embedded captions?
Could you repeat?
With MPEG-5, will that standard probably continue to use VTT files or other external caption files? Or
to my knowledge, the answer to that is yes, that as we move forward to MPEG-5, an external file methodology, you know, will remain the same. At least that part we won't have to do again.
In regard to the description of, you know, being accurate and spelled correctly, I want to talk a little bit about, get your opinion on the placement. And I found it curious, as it says it doesn't obstruct other graphics being in the news world, all of our captioning that we see is lower third, and guess where our inserts are? Lower third. So they're obstructed all of the time. So when somebody is looking at that in an audit, I mean, they could say, well, you're blocking the on-screen graphics with your closed captioning. Now, unless there's an automatic sensor that will move the captioning around the screen, and I'm talking about live news, we can't predict where to put it necessarily in a live program. So is there anything out there that will eliminate that issue?
I am not aware of a product that will auto-detect for other scene graphic elements. Short of having a captioning safe zone in graphics design, and then throw everything up high.
Speaking of closed caption placement on the screen, we've found that you take two different manufacturers of TV sets, and they're going to be off by a line. There doesn't seem to be any real hard standard that if you want to try to micro-place something, it's a bear, because a set someplace is going to cover something up. If you put it up too high, it's going to go over, one of them's going to go over the face. You go low, you're going over graphics. So how do you deal with that?
Kelly, here. So a couple of things. And I'm sorry, I work on this day and night. all right, so what the commission is really mostly concerned about, well, let's step back and talk about the audit. The commission's enforcement on captioning recently changed in the sort of the first of this year, where they're really looking at complaint driven issues. The idea that they would actually be watching and go, ooh, I gotcha, probably isn't going to happen. What happens is if you get a complaint that can't be resolved, then you have a problem. Then the commission will get involved. But there's an expectation with the commission that is you get a complaint that you'll deal with that viewer and try to figure out what the issue is. The thing with the placement, really what they mostly care about is that you do not obstruct the captions, which generally is impossible because, remember, as you just pointed out, they're decoded in the set. However, not to plug someone, there's a company called EEG that makes caption encoders. They have or had a product that does auto-detect graphics on the screen and can place the captions so it doesn't obliterate the graphics. However, typically what I've found is when you move that lower third up, now you're worried about obliterating someone's head, which is a bigger problem. So you have some discretion on that. One of the things I think that the commission is really more concerned about is if you have emergency information or something really going on in the bottom, you know, the promo from Mike the plumber that's scrolling in your lower third, they probably wouldn't care that you're obliterating that. But they just want to make sure that the captions are there and the captions are readable. Also remember, and this is where you get into this, by law, TV sets have to have the ability to change the size, the font, the size, the color, and all of that. So you could spend all your time making sure that caption window is in the right place, and somebody blows that thing up to 85-point font, and the caption's obliterating the whole screen. And you're right, there's nothing you can do about that. So it's just an ongoing thing. You just need to be mindful. And the big thing, like I said, is yesterday was, have a way to monitor your captions so that you know that what you sent, that you are aware of what you sent. That's probably the biggest deal.
Thank you. You're much closer to the intent of the FCC than hopefully I'll ever be in my life. Well, thank you very much.